Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Should GLP-1 weight loss medication like Wegovy and Zepbound cost thousands of dollars? We don't think so. Try LifeMD.com helps provide insurance access to the leading GLP-1 medications. Visit TryLifeMD.com and check your eligibility for GLP-1 medication with copays as low as $0. Listen to Bridget's story after losing 55 pounds and using her insurance for coverage.
LifeMD helped me get covered with my insurance. Finding out that it was covered was huge. I've lost 55 pounds. I am so much healthier now that I've lost the weight. I would never be able to do it without them.
Get started today and check your eligibility for GLP-1 medication with copays as low as $0 at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to aero hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.
Welcome to La Liga Weekly. Congratulations to Real Madrid, who've won their 36th La Liga title by the simple tactical innovation of having better players than everybody else. They clinched the title a couple of hours after beating Cadiz, perhaps fittingly for this season when Barcelona's mistakes saw them lose at Girona. Of course, Girona's Champions League qualification is the reaffirming story of this season. Now, wouldn't it be great if they went into the fourth tier purple zone of a European Super League, where one day perhaps they'll be worthy of playing the likes of Barcelona? By the way, just because the title is sorted doesn't mean there's nothing to play for in La Liga. For example, can Athletic make up a 6-point gap on Atletico? Can Betis overhaul La Real in the race for 7th? And can Cadiz randomly win a load of games and stay up when they've scored 22 goals all season so far? Stay tuned, everybody. Everything left to play for in La Liga this season. We're going to have to start making stuff up, Terry, before
the... Oh, the race for the Pichichi, that's one. Yep.
That's true. Yes, the race for the Pichichi. Good one. Good one. Yes, but of course, it's all about the race for the title. Congratulations to Real Madrid. Obviously, this is not a shock, Terry. This story has unfolded. We've been with you every step of the way. It comes as no surprise, as I say. Credit to everybody involved. Their players are better than everybody else. They should have won. They did win. Sort of the story of the season.
You say that the players are better. They've clearly shown that throughout the season. I think a lot of it is down to consistency in terms of from the manager, in terms of team selection. And I think consistency in terms of the standard that we've seen from the players has been they've lost one game. And that was away to Atletico Madrid. They don't have disasters. They don't have dreadful games. And that's the players and the manager. He makes the right substitutions. He makes the right tactical decisions during the games that have been close. They've just been really good throughout the season. And you know, they've won big games. They've been Barcelona twice. They've been Girona twice. And they've just been... efficient is probably underestimated it, but they've been really good all season. And this comes on the back of losing important players. Benzema leaving before the season started and them choosing not to replace him directly, bringing in Joselu on loan from Espanyol. They've lost David Alaba during the season. They lost Militao and Courtois. Militao in the first game of the season, Courtois before the season started. And Ancelotti made it clear he wasn't going to go out and buy replacements to play at centre back. He would use the players he had. There was raised eyebrows at the time because you're thinking Militao's going to be missing for the whole season. They brought in Kepa, and yet Andre Lunin has won the battle to become the first choice goalkeeper in the absence of Courtois. So it hasn't been plain sailing for Real Madrid, and we can make a case for Barcelona's suffered injuries. But so have Real Madrid, and they've made light work of it, and that's backed by it's supported, the consistency is supported by stability of Ancelotti.
Yeah,
when a lot of managers would have gone, when they lost Militao, and then they lose David Alaba, they would have been, you know, knocking on the president's door demanding at least a loan player, and Ancelotti just said, no, I can use Tchouaméni there. I've got Nacho, you know, Rüdiger's playing well. I could use Camavinga there if I need to. Danny Carvajal can play there if there's an emergency, and it was kind of reassuring that one of the biggest clubs in the world, one of the most important managers in the world, was sort of old school in the fact that no, I've seen enough in training. I know that Tchouaméni can play there if we need to have a panic, and they've just been the minimum of fuss all the way through. And they've been good to watch. They haven't been prolific. They've relied heavily on Jude Bellingham in the first half of the season to come up with the goals, to win points, to win matches. And it bodes well for the future because we're anticipating that Kylian Mbappe joins the club. So the year of transition between Benzema leaving and Hossolu coming in alone and waiting, Real Madrid hoping he isn't done yet, but we assume it's going to be, and waiting for Mbappe and hoping that he doesn't change his mind again, was a little bit of a gamble from Real Madrid. You could have made a point if they hadn't won the league this year and hadn't gone so well in the Champions League, that everybody knew this was going to happen. You know, if you didn't replace Benzema, Harry Kane was available and you chose not to go for him, it could have been a problem for Real Madrid, but it just hasn't been. And yeah. I think it's a lot of it does go down to the fact they have a manager with a level head. He doesn't panic. He doesn't get too excited when things are going well. And of course, on top of that, they do have an array of fantastic players. He's kept the squad harmonious as well. I imagine there'll be players that will be itching to get away now once the season ends. But somehow he's managed to persuade them to all be on board throughout the entire campaign.
When you say get away, as in leave the club or go on holiday?
In what way, sorry?
Yeah, yes. So when you say the players are itching to get away.
No, away from the club.
For natural leaving, isn't it?
Transfers, yeah. Dani Ceballos and people like that. That Modric, maybe. He probably won't be happy with the contribution he's been allowed to give to Real Madrid season. There'll be four or five players who, Arda Güler might be one of those that thinks, well, I've been here a year and I've barely played. I've only played when getting games that don't matter. You know, Nacho is another one that's probably looking at it and thinking, well, Militao's back now, Alaba's going to be back.
Where will he go?
I did hear Graham Hunter say the MLS.
Right, okay. Yeah.
So that kind of fits the bill, to be honest. Yeah. Who knows what his ambition is, but he probably is aware that he got playing time this year because of serious injuries to centre backs. That there might be some other players as well that are thinking, I want to be playing more. I don't want to be sat on the bench for a whole year. I'm happy with the campaign in general in terms of the fact that we've won the league again. I've got another medal, win the Champions League semi final, but I want to contribute on a regular basis. And then what will happen to Hossolu if Espanyol come up? They're currently fighting to be in the playoffs. Will he go back to Espanyol? And then it'd be like in years to come, he'd go, that year I had at Real Madrid.
dream.
If we won the Champions League, the Champions League and the league title, then I left Alaves because they got relegated. I left Espanyol. They got relegated because they got relegated. I had a year on loan at Real Madrid. We won the league and the Champions League. Yeah. And then I went to Espanyol.
Scores 10 goals and they get relegated next season.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting. So they've really made do this year. We're still fantastic players. But he has that ability, Ancelotti, keeping everybody on board for a season.
Yeah. So does that show a weakness? I don't know, because Real Madrid, they're obviously really good because they're in the semi-finals of the Champions League. You know, a couple of days away from finding out whether they're going to be in the final. 2-2 the first leg against Bayern last week. Does it show weakness in the rest? I've got a question from Darren to come, but... Yeah, in fact, yeah. Let me ask you a couple of questions about the game because there's loads to say about that. So, with the obviously they won 3-0, they made a load of changes. Courtois played, Militao played. Who out of that lot is playing against Bayern this week?
Oh, I'd play Courtois.
Yeah,
I would definitely play Courtois. I think that the match fitness aspect is so different for a goalkeeper compared to an outfield player.
He looked sharp, didn't he? Made a really good save just before the Brahim goal, didn't he?
Classic Courtois save. Spread himself, made the block. Mm. And I think I don't want to be disparaging about Andre Lunin because I think he's done well. And he rightly won that battle, I think, with Kepa or Ritsa Balaga. But I think Courtois makes the save in the Champions League in the first game against Bayern Munich when he's beaten from Leroy Sané down there. Yeah. It wasn't at the near post. It was down to his left. I think Courtois at least sticks a leg out and makes the block. His anticipation of where Sané was going to put the shot might have been better, probably would have been better. So I think in a game of this importance, I don't think it's much of a risk. It's more of a risk to Courtois than it is to Real Madrid.
Yeah.
Because Courtois we've seen it in the past, players come back from an ACL injury and he's already had an issue with a torn meniscus and his recovery, but I'm sure they've monitored it. He's been training and for quite some time now on a regular basis with the squad. Mm. Ancelotti said 2 or 3 weeks ago he was going to play against Cadiz. The only reason he's playing against Cadiz is to give him confidence and belief that he can play against Bayern Munich. Yeah. Otherwise, there'd be no point. You'd leave him on the bench and take it easy and stick with Lunin and or maybe have played Kepa in this one.
Yeah,
to make sure Lunin's fit for the second leg. But I'm convinced that
Ancelotti
will play him in the second leg. It's
there's no fatigue issue, is there? Leaving out other players, like leaving out Bellingham, etc. That's because you're concerned about fatigue, isn't it? But you're not with Lunin, are you? So it's different for a goalkeeper, isn't it? Right, yes. So a little bit of comparison, Real Madrid to Barcelona. Let me just read you. So Darren's one of our patrons, patreon.com/LTEL. Question. What do you think the key difference is between Madrid and Barca this season? Has it been the leadership of the players on the field? Real demonstrated again on Wednesday. Bayern scored twice quickly. They're on top, but they didn't buckle under pressure. They knew how to suffer, found a way. Whereas with Barca, one setback feels like an unrecoverable trauma. I think Ilkay Gundogan has been an enormous disappointment this season. Darren's a Barca fan, by the way. I genuinely thought he would elevate the standard of the league. Watching his lack of effort run and help his team off the ball against Girona spoke volumes. He's spoken out about failures of the squad immediately after two of the club's lowest moments in the season, the first Clasico and the PSG second leg. But his words haven't been backed up by his own performances. It's undermined his manager, who subsequently had to put out fires in the press afterwards. With so many young players in the side, it's the on-field leadership of senior players that's vital. Gundogan, De Jong, Lewandowski aren't acting responsibly. Compare that to Rudiger, Carvajal, Kroos, and the understated asset of Bellingham's maturity, etc. And then he also mentioned the financial drain of those players on Barcelona. So is that? I think it's a good point, isn't it? How important is it?
It is. It's been vitally important, and Barcelona are full of dramas, and the game at the weekend sums them up this season. And I take his point, Darren's point about Gundogan. I don't think he's been brilliant. I don't think he's been terrible. I think his comments were ill-timed. I think they could have been said at a different moment, perhaps when they'd won a game.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe sneaked a victory, then he could have made those points. But I don't think he's been fantastic. And that means that then he's not exempt from criticism. He has to be part of that. And the older group of players, Lewandowski has been, I would imagine for a Barcelona supporter, frustrating because we have seen glimpses. I mean, 17 glimpses of what he can do.
Yeah.
But you just feel there was so much more. So there is a feeling of, I mean, this is on the back of Xavi winning the league and Lewandowski winning the Pichichi. Then the second season, Xavi doesn't win the league. Lewandowski is scored 17, only 17 goals. I mean, it's by his standards, it's nowhere near what people expect. And there's been disappointment about Lewandowski. And I kind of share that disappointment, if I'm being honest. But I think it's just the consistency of performance and the focus that Real Madrid players have compared in comparison to Barcelona's. We're forgetting to mention Girona because they've surpassed every expectation anybody could have thought of. So we have to compare Real Madrid to Barcelona because, and maybe Atletico, because they've had their faults as well. But Real Madrid are not a prolific goal-scoring team. Mm. It's not a team where you look at it and thinking, right, why have they won the league? That's one defeat away to Atletico Madrid. They've made too many slip-ups when it's come to drawing games. One or two.
There's no tactical innovation in there. It's all just ways of winning games, isn't it? It's
and fundamentals. The fundamentals. Yeah. We're not going to concede. They've only conceded 22. Yeah. Girona have conceded 42. Barcelona 43. I'm looking at the teams that have conceded less goals than Barcelona. Atleti 39, surprisingly. Athletic 33 conceded, Real Sociedad 35, Betis 39, Valencia 39, Alaves have conceded less goals than Barcelona.
Yeah,
Barcelona won the title last year because of their defensive record, and it just seems as if that's all completely gone out the window the following season. It was a weird season when Barcelona won the league. They're ridiculously good defensive record without appearing to be ridiculously good defensively.
Yeah.
They weren't a defensive team. To Stegen had the season of his career.
Yeah.
Teams missed chances and opportunities. And somehow Barcelona, again, they weren't prolific, but they did have this fantastic goals against record they were defending. So when you look at all those teams that conceded less this year, I think it can sometimes be too simplistic, but you look at it and think, yeah, Barcelona scored 70, Real Madrid has scored 74. That's not the massive difference. But it's the goals against.
And literally, one player in that respect who there wasn't on Darren's list is Ter Stegen, because he massively overperformed, even for a player of his quality, overperformed last season. And he's been pretty average this season.
And he's missed games as well.
Yeah.
And you played quite a few games. I mean, Barcelona, I think, conceded 21 goals away from home.
Yeah.
Real Madrid conceded 22 home and away.
Yeah.
So that I think that's the biggest difference. So it's not as if they're 30 goals behind Real Madrid in terms of goals scored, but it's that focus and they've lost twice to Girona, home and away, and conceded 8 goals in those two games. Now, there's been other games. I think they drew 3-3 with Granada. And how is that happening?
Yeah.
When it was Granada.
5 against Villarreal, wasn't it?
3 at home. Yeah. And they drew away to Granada as well.
Yeah.
So but those slip-ups, you know, it's a very different Barcelona team. It's a team in transition. And Real Madrid still had the core of their team that have been challenging for everything for a number of years now.
I saw somebody on the
difference this year in terms of what we've seen from Real Madrid in the past.
I saw somebody on Twitter, we might debate this another day, Terry, who basically said the conditions are there for Real Madrid to go on a Bayern Munich / Juventus style 6, 7, 8 year, 10 years in Bayern's case, domination of the league. I don't know. We'll debate that. I get the point. The conditions are there, aren't they, because of the finances?
It's easy to say that at the moment because the Real Madrid, everything in the garden is rosy.
Yeah.
Barcelona, we don't know what's coming in the next few weeks in terms of the transfer window. We now know Xavi is staying, but we won't be able to assess this until the next season starts.
Yeah.
I don't think it's possible. I don't think it's likely. I still think that Barcelona and Atletico are in a position to still put up a really good challenge against Real Madrid. And I think that will be the case. I mean, Barcelona haven't been helped by being in Montjuic. That's another addition to what was different to last season. Real Madrid will argue that they were affected when they couldn't play at the Bernabeu, and it was COVID, but when they did go back to the Bernabeu, and parts of the stadium weren't open and stuff like that. Both teams are always moving forward. Atletico Madrid will always look to move forward now. So I don't think it's cut and dried that because Mbappe is joining and because of the current state of Barcelona. And Barcelona won the league last season.
Yeah.
There has been improvement this season, I think, in during the season in terms of where we thought Barcelona would be. I think they had a better run in the Champions League than a lot of people imagined. So there's been improvement in the European form. Some games have been really good. And, of course, we've got the introduction of young players playing on a regular basis that are going to be hugely important. And I think it's a learning curve for Xavi. I still think I'm glad he's staying. I like his faith in the young players. It's a headache managing Barcelona at this current time. He made several errors at the weekend in terms of team selection and then the substitutions made. And it looked a shambles at the end. And we haven't ever seen that from Real Madrid this season, where you're looking at a Real Madrid game, you're thinking, this is a shambles. No one knows what's happening. No one knows who's playing where. They're all over the place. Ancelotti's made the wrong changes. What's he doing? With Xavi, that's happened quite a few times this year, and particularly the weekend. I'm looking and thinking, why have we done that? Why have you left him on? Why have you taken him off? Oh, and now you've kind of trying to rectify that earlier mistake.
Yeah.
And
why are your players passing the ball to the other team in front of the goal? Would be another consideration. So that game, obviously, and we'll blend in to talking about Girona, because they were the story of the first two-thirds of the season. Is that just past halfway of the season, weren't they? They were magnificent. We loved them. And then they stumbled a bit, didn't they, particularly in some away games. But it was great to see them seize it. Beautiful combination of Barcelona, terrible mistake, and then Porto Van Basten with a volley to wrap it up, and they've qualified for the Champions League. They're currently above Barcelona, but we don't know. That's something to play for, isn't it? Yeah, come on, the battle for second. They've been a magnificent story this season, Girona, and they're in the Champions League, Terry.
They've lost one home game against Real Madrid. They've been Barcelona home and away. They score a lot of goals. They concede a lot of goals. I can be critical of Barcelona conceding the goals they concede. I don't want to be critical of Girona because it's their, it is their style.
Yeah.
And we didn't expect Barcelona and Girona to be, as things stand, in between Real Madrid and Barcelona. So you look at it, and I'm one of those that thought, now you can do this in a cup run with a team that's punching above their weight. You can get a cup run where the players, as a group of players, and the fans believe you can do five or six games and you can, as I say, punch above your weight. But to do it over the course of a whole season with players who never expected. I mean, it's their fourth ever season in La Liga, which don't affect the players too much because they're not interested in what happened 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years ago in the history of the club. But when they set off at the start of the season, I can't imagine there was one player in the changing room that thought, we finished 10th last year. It's our second season this year. We really should be pushing for the top four and maybe stick in there and try and win the title. No chance. Michel looked bewildered after the game. The players looked bewildered as if we've done it. Mm. I can't believe we've done it. They were compared to Leicester. They're a million miles away from being as big as Leicester.
Yeah.
No, they haven't got the history of a Leicester. So what they've done is, it's astonishing. And they had a little wobble. The heavy defeat away from home against Real Madrid was a blow. And then they lost 5-8 between week 24 and 31. And there was part of me thinking that this was the wobble that we expected. I expected it when they lost at home to Real Madrid and they got thumped. And there was a huge difference in class. And I thought, well, bless them. They've come this far. I'm not even sure they'll finish top four now. It's going to be a big ask. I'm happy to be proved wrong. I couldn't be happier. Football needs this, not just La Liga. Football needs an upset. It needs a Leverkusen. It needs Girona. We need to, someone else to get amongst the established clubs throughout the major leagues in Europe and Champions League. I never thought it would be Girona. 10th last year, 10th again this year would have been
decent,
a good outcome for Michel and his team. and to see them celebrating week after week. And I was pleased that we saw their true style in this game. And we have to touch on the game. I mean, it was a fantastic goal by Christensen.
Mm.
And then classic Barcelona. How do you allow it? You've got 11 players in your own half, and within seconds, someone's crossing it and someone's unmarked in the penalty box. It's like, I can't work out where everyone went for Barcelona. You're starting off with 11 players in your own half. You can defend, surely. Yeah. And they didn't. The penalty comes, Lewandowski scores, and then the introduction of Paul II. But it was, what was pleasing was we saw everything that we've seen from Girona this season wrapped up in one game. They were getting totally outplayed for 20 minutes in the second half. Totally outplayed. That would be the annoying and irritating thing for Xavi, that Barcelona was so wasteful. They had so many attacking opportunities. They were picking out the wrong player when they were crossing it into the box or passing it into the box. For that, Barcelona could have been 3 or 4 goals ahead before the introduction of Paul II.
Mm-hmm.
And it was their own fault. And then that's why we love watching football. There's only one winner in that first 20 minutes of the second half. Girona were all over the place. Barcelona on top. We forget about that now. You know, you look at the scoreline, you forget about the story of the game. Girona were totally getting outplayed. And then one change. And then Barcelona then panics. Xavi panics, makes substitutions. And 3 goals in 10 minutes for Girona. Completely turns the game around. And then we have the celebrations and the joy. And then we have the trials and tribulations of Barcelona, where Xavi's chucking on subs and taking off Lewandowski and he's taking off Christensen straight away, and he left Sergio Roberto on. He took off Fermin Lopez, who's a player that might get you a goal. He takes him off, he takes Lewandowski off, and then he's putting other players on. He's thinking, this looks a mess now. Mm. You could really have done with Lewandowski on and Fermin Lopez when you've gone behind. And it was the last sort of 30 minutes in this game, you forget the rest of it. Yeah. Barcelona outplayed them.
Yeah.
And
But then that's fair.
Well,
as the old German coach said, the game is 90 minutes long. So
exactly.
Yeah, yeah. You can't.
We go back to earlier when we said one setback and everything goes wrong for Barcelona.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas the senior players have a part to play.
Mm.
And they weren't able to do that, and they just got caught in a whirlwind from Paul II. I mean, yeah. The volley is ridiculous. Christensen's goal is, commentating on the game, you look at that, Lewandowski, and what? It's Christensen. His chest and turned and spun it, hit it on the volley, and
yeah. If that had been Bellingham, then we would have been talking about it all weekend, wouldn't we? Or if Mbappe, imagine Mbappe does that on his debut for Real Madrid.
Exactly.
And then
it was overshadowed though by Paul II, his goal.
Yeah.
So that's why we're talking about a Barcelona defeat and Christensen scoring that early goal, but it's overshadowed by the result, the outcome of the game, and an even better goal from Paul II. So it was. I'm glad we got to saw. Viewers in the UK watching it on the ITV, we saw Girona, the big build-up, and they got thumped by Real Madrid. And people probably thought, well, they weren't very good. Yeah, of course, in that game they weren't. And I'm glad this game was on in the UK on ITV, and I'm glad we got to see what we've seen all year from Girona, which was full commitment. They played in this game. I was critical at one stage when they were getting outplayed. They were playing almost a 4-2-4, but fullback pushing on.
Mm.
So there was 2 players in midfield, Alex Garcia, Yangel Herrera, not being helped, Ivan Martin. They left 4 up front. They left Sienkoff and Savio and Dovbik and Ivan Martin. They weren't tracking back. They were staying up front. And when Girona got the ball, they got it forward quickly and were causing Barcelona 1 or 2 problems. But it meant they were totally outplayed in midfield. But they stuck with it. And then when you see crosses going into the box and there's half a dozen red and white shirts in there.
Yeah.
Barcelona couldn't deal with it. And that's what we've seen all season. And I'm glad people got to see what's made Girona spectacularly successful this year. And it is that commitment, bravery to attacking football and basically scoring more goals than the opposition. And they've done that throughout the season. So yeah. I still... look at them, and we've mentioned it all season, I do see other teams crossing the ball into the box and thinking, well, he's not going to score because no one's in there. And looking at Sevilla at the moment, suddenly they're doing it because they're free from relegation issues. They're crossing it and they've got bodies in the box. But when you're struggling to get results and you don't commit, you know, there's other teams that I see crosses going in there and there's one centre forward in the box. With Girona, all season, their commitment from game one to taking that risk, getting players into attacking positions, giving players freedom to get forward, is the biggest reason why they've succeeded and they have now clinched a top four place.
All right, we better crack on, Terry, because I think we're on the cheapo Zoom today. We only did half an hour. There's no timer on my screen, so anyway, there we are. It's our problem, not everybody else's. Right, Atletico recorded a magnificent win, Terry. Imagine going to the likes of Mallorca and being able to hang on to 3 points.
Fantastic goal, though, we have to say that.
Yeah.
Lost everybody then at the drag back to finish. No one had a clue that was coming. Rodrigo Riquelme after 5 minutes, then they gifted Mallorca, a team who don't want possession, 60% possession. And they kind of liked it, to be honest, by Atleti. And I've moaned about, you know, this and that about Atletico Madrid this year, and it's quite comforting to see them go to a team that they should be beating, that are struggling, that just on the fringes of a relegation campaign, and Atletico get the early goal, and then think, right, you're not going to score against us now, and they were able to do it. So something like 13 games without a clean sheet. So yes, Atletico should be different and should be better. But there was something comforting about them getting the 1-0 win away from home. And it's been, we have to be honest, it's not easy for Atleti away from home, even this game. You know, to get the 1-0 win, it meant a lot. It gives them a good comfort in terms of their position and above Athletic Club. It's a big win. But it is funny when you look and think, they've gone 1-0 up.
Mm.
And then that was it. You're not scoring. But that's what's given Atleti and Simeone success in recent seasons, and something that's been completely forgotten about this year.
Yeah. So the only team sort of chasing them down, but 6 points behind, I'm not, you know, I don't think Atleti are going to let them in really now. Athletic won 2-0 at Getafe, despite two red cards, and the manager got a red card as well. It's slightly a chaotic game. Although the number of red cards in Ligue 1 means the French are trying to chase down La Liga for the coveted prize of the most red cards in a season. Iñaki got both of the goals on the red card. Obviously, Paredes was one of the most brainless sendings off you could possibly imagine. He'd been booked like 5 minutes before, hadn't he?
Yeah.
And then he sort of... I thought he lost his bearings or something, didn't he? And overran the ball and then fouled. And you think, mate, there was absolutely no need for any of that to happen. It's just it's entirely self-inflicted red card. But I thought Hirai's was extraordinarily harsh because he's just inside his own half, isn't he? And it's obviously a yellow card because he blocks the ball with his hand when there's a break. But you know, hang on, mate, you have 50 yards from goal.
Yeah.
With other players around. How can that be a goal-scoring opportunity?
Do you know what? Every week now, there's something happens in a game, and I thought I knew the laws of the game.
Yeah.
It's important that, as analysts, we're on top of it. You think you are, and then something happens, and you go, perhaps I'm not.
You need to be able to ring IFAB every week, don't you? And say, right, hang on, is this a rule, or is this, have we just gone crazy with the interpretation of this one?
Exactly. It was a fascinating game to watch. Getafe played really well. They come away nothing. Unai Simon had probably the game of his career in terms of...
But a good season.
Getafe, 34 shots.
Yeah.
9 on target.
Yeah.
They missed a penalty. Mason Greenwood, Unai Simon makes the save. Getafe were not going to score. And then Iñaki Williams, fantastic first goal, good second goal. It was a big win for Athletic Club. It did put the pressure on Atleti for the game the following day, hence the reason Atleti got the early goal and then were determination to make sure they kept the clean sheet and maintain that 6-point gap. But it was a a good win for Athletic Club in the circumstances. And it's really weird when you've only got eight outfield players and you're hanging on and you know it's going to be there's no point in playing any attacking football whatsoever, particularly as you've got a lead to hold on to. So it was an interesting game to watch, that's for sure. They made life hard for themselves. And as I say, if it wasn't for Unai Simon, then Hetafe could have got back into this game, to be honest.
Yeah, we're getting close to the old last teams of the season, Terry, the one player per club teams of the season. I'm going to hang on. I don't want them too early. I always think awards are given out too early. For example, we've already done the Football Writers Player of the Year in England, and we don't know who's going to win the title, which I find too early.
And Erling Haaland got four after the award given. He could score four in every game from now then, and then to the end of the season. We'll wait. We've got plenty of time in the summer, and we've got build up to the Euros, and we've got
around...
to look back. We're talking about Real Madrid winning the league today, but we'll do something where we look in greater detail at why they won the league.
Yeah.
We barely mentioned the game against Cadiz. It wasn't a massive game, but
I think when we get to the one player per club teams of the season, Unai Simon is a candidate. And I think Nico Williams, I think it'll be interesting to one of those clubs where it's hard to pick who your outstanding player is. That's why it's such a good challenge. So you can start thinking about it, but we don't want them yet. So hold your horses, everybody. Right. The battle for seventh, Terry, which is, I think we'll brand that the battle for seventh and get some graphics done and a bit of music and stuff. Sky would do it. They wouldn't hold back. So in the battle for seventh, both Real Sociedad beat Las Palmas 2-0. That was a shock. And Betis won 2-0 at Osasuna, who they were complaining about a red card for John Moncayola. He did boot his opponent in the head.
Head high. It wasn't as if his opponent bent his head down. It was John Moncayola with the challenge. Mm. Yeah, it was reckless. Mm. Yeah, studs up, 6 foot in the air, kung fu kick in the head. Does normally pick up a red card.
Yeah, the game's gone mad. Yeah.
A referee gave the yellow.
Yeah, yeah.
He went to VAR.
Yeah, yeah.
And as soon as the referee went to VAR, Moncayola was walking off. He knew. Yeah, I might have overdone it on that one. He was trying to make an attempt on goal.
Yeah.
It was a cross coming in, wasn't it? And he jumped up and thought he could hit it on the volley high up in the air with the studs.
Yeah. But it's a genuine 50-50. This is not the case that we're outlawing the overhead kick, because an overhead kick is always an element of danger about it. We don't want to outlaw it, but it was there to be headed, really, wasn't it?
Yes.
And he went with his foot and nearly kicked the bloke's head off.
Yes.
Yes.
And then, of course, that changes the game. It's early in the match. Still work for Betis to do. They weren't convincing. Quick fire, a couple of goals just before half time. And then in the second half, Osasuna with 10 men and a 2-goal deficit. Probably with a better team, to be honest. But again, for Betis, it's about getting the win. They haven't been consistent in recent weeks. Found wins hard to come by. So, Jose Perez, mistake from the goalkeeper for the first one. And then Pablo Fornals then probably takes the game away from Osasuna. But they made a really good attempt, Osasuna, to try and get back in the game despite being down to 10 men. Mm. Big win for Betis.
Real Sociedad 2-0 win. I mean, Becker was the crucial player, wasn't he? He forced the own goal, didn't he? And then he lashes one in at the near post.
He's been good, hasn't he?
He's been really good.
I'm frustrated. We haven't seen him play every game, to be honest. He's been on the bench a lot of it. €3 million, I think they brought him in from Union Berlin. And it does go to show there is still value out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he was fantastic.
Was massively highly rated last season. Obviously, Union Berlin then, bottomed out this year, didn't they? So he came... He wasn't an unknown that they picked up for 3 million.
Oh.
So, good work. Las Palmas lost a game, Jerry. Shocking.
We're going to have to look at... I overlook how many games they haven't... Their recent run of form. We all know it's bad. I'm going to look and study it and see how many games this goes back. And it's not good.
Yeah.
It's damaged their reputation.
Damaged
the manager's reputation.
Yeah.
And every week now, they're slipping further and down. Further down a place. They're going to be okay. I mean, they're not going to get relegated. They're going to survive. That will be a success in itself. That was their aim.
Yeah.
Newly promoted, they've done that, but they did that halfway through the season. They were safe from relegation. And it can either go two ways then. It can either go, well, we can play carefree now. Yes, and we can play with confidence and belief, or we can just take our foot off the pedal, which in this case they have, and now they can't win a game.
Yeah, seven straight defeats and no win in 10. So 2 points from 10, because they drew a couple of games end of Feb, beginning of March, and have lost everything since.
With 2 points from a possible 30.
Yeah, and how many goals have they scored? They got one against Celta Vigo. One goal in seven games. And lost every one of those seven games. Yeah. So, honestly.
It's not pretty to watch at the moment.
No.
But this, losing 2-0 away from home at Real Sociedad isn't a disgrace. But it's just this run of form that Las Palmas have found themselves in. And Garcia Pimienta has gone from a manager. You're thinking, oh, I wonder if someone's going to try and take him away from Las Palmas. They're probably not now.
Yeah.
It doesn't bode well for next season. So they've had a season, Las Palmas, where they were awful to start with, and I predicted they go down. Then they had this ridiculously good run, similar to Girona's type of form, and then gone back to being really poor. And you're thinking, at the back of my head now, I'm thinking, they're lucky to stay up.
Yeah.
Because they weren't very good. They haven't been very good now. They had a purple patch in the middle.
Yeah. They're definitely relegation contenders for next season.
Yeah.
Because of this, run of form says if they start like this.
There's a problem at the beginning, and now this part of the season, they had a purple patch where they were scoring goals, and you thought, oh, it's all coming together now. And unfortunately for them, it's completely off track now.
Yeah. Because they were keeping clean sheets, weren't they? All those wins, just about all those wins were to nil, weren't they? If I remember right, a couple of them, yeah. Right, Celta Vigo got a massive win, didn't they, against Villarreal? Another one aided by a red card, Santi Comesaña, which went to VAR, didn't it? How on earth has that gone to VAR? I mean, I'm not hungry for more red cards, obviously, but it was halfway up his leg, halfway up his shin, wasn't it?
I've no major problem with that. I think that because you don't know what angle the referee's got.
Yeah, fair enough.
We've seen it. And then he's made the decision. It was yellow, and then it went to VAR. And then on VAR, you're thinking, oh, he's gone. It's going to be a red card.
Yeah.
So it's...
I suppose that's VAR's doing his job. VAR. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've as long as it's done quickly.
Yeah.
We get chance of replays and angles and stuff. The referee might think, did he touch the ball first? He's obviously made connection. There's heavy collision. Let's just check that. So I don't have a major issue with that. Sometimes you do see it, though, and you go, how didn't he see that first time?
Yeah.
But VAR is there for that. And it was clear. 17th minute, Comesaña. I don't think he meant to do it. It was just a clumsy challenge. He goes through the ball and then clatters in. But that made life difficult. For some really good goals in this game as well. I mean, Alberto Moreno and Gonzalo Guedes scored good goals. It was a tough game for Villarreal. Celta, Claudio Giraldo has done the job. It was a gamble. It was a gamble worth taking. They were a different team under Giraldo to what they were under Rafa Benitez.
Yeah.
As too much changes in terms of team selection. It's the same players, but he's given them a belief and given them a little bit more freedom than they had under Rafa Benitez. That worked initially. They got a bit of confidence. And they're 8 clear now of Cadiz in relegation. So it's job done by Celta Vigo. Stuart Larsson's a good player. I mean, he was really effective in this game. Aspas does seem to get more of the acclaim, but I think he's been the key player for Celta this season, the big Norwegian centre forward.
Alves won again. 3 wins in a row. We were slagging them off 3 weeks ago. They're a funny team, aren't they? In terms, they're a bit of an outlier when you start looking at some of the stats. But for example, they're the lowest possession team in La Liga.
I suppose they're they are now a mid-table team, and so therefore, by definition, mid-table teams are inconsistent, or almost always, aren't they? There's always good things about them and bad things about them, but goes down as a good season.
Oh, an unbelievable season! It really is. And in the past, they've been a hard watch. They've been okay this year. They've not been as dull as we've seen in the past. And yeah, this is another good win. It's two who's made a difference in recent weeks is Giuliano Simeone.
Right, yeah. Yes.
Made a huge difference to Alaves. So they were finding it hard to be creative and score goals. It was chopping and changing between Samu Amorodi and Kike Garcia. Luis Rioja was always the player, whether it was going to be Guridi playing off the front, who was going to be playing out in a wide position. But since Simeone's come back from his dreadful injury, he's given them a whole new dynamic. He's on loan, isn't he, from Atleti? I've seen him, I'm thinking, well, he really does need to be back with Dad.
But they've loaned players out well, though, Atleti, in recent seasons, haven't they? Lino, Riquelme. Spring to mind. As I said, I think I said it in last week's intro. It's not sort of, they don't need another attacker, Atleti. That's not the obvious problem that they've got.
No, but what I've seen from Simeone is you know, they might not need an extra one in terms of numbers.
Yeah.
Swap one, sell one.
Yeah.
Because I do think he's young, he's powerful, similar traits to the dad. He's ultra competitive, he's a really good player. So I'd like to see him get playing time next season.
Yeah.
If it means bringing him back, selling a player, getting a few quid in, which means they then can spend on some 35-year-old defenders with the spare change, then so be it. Maybe there's a midfielder floating around European football that can fancy a couple of years playing as a centre-back.
Yeah. Luka Modric, that's the centre-back.
The investment needs to be made in central defence. But Simeone has been brilliant since his... Giuliano Simeone has been brilliant since he returned back from injury.
Sevilla, you touched on this earlier, getting the ball in the box, getting men in the box, getting on the end of crosses, Acuña, of all people, getting on the end of a
from
a
Navas.
Yeah, yeah.
So you've got wing-backs, wingers, full-backs, crossing one to the other. And that was the big difference. And it's easier when you're doing it in a position where Sevilla aren't currently, but they're playing well. They're free from relegation worries. So they can be ambitious with their creative play rather than being cautious and being pessimistic instead of being optimistic. They're firing on all cylinders now. Mm. It's a shame for Sevilla's point of view. The season's going to end when they're not a million miles away from the European battle.
Yeah,
that big drama that we've got. So you know, they're not going to do it. Time is going to run out. A top 10 finish is well within reach. But it's watching Sevilla now is just like watching the Sevilla teams we've become accustomed to in the past. Good players, they're a strong physical outfit. Players that score goals, and when they play with attacking flair and confidence, I just hope Kike Sanchez Flores is there next season. I'm not entirely convinced he will be. I think he wants to be. Mm. People at the club want him to be, but I don't know which direction the club is going to go at the moment because of the backroom hostility that's going on at Sevilla currently.
Right, yeah.
They're in charge, don't know who's going to be choosing the manager. Don't know whether Kike Sanchez Flores wants to be around when this is continuing. So it's going to be interesting, but I do hope he, from what I've seen, Luca Bacchio scored a great goal in this game. Cunha gets a goal, and Nziri gets another one. They've got good players. They're all back fit again now. They're confident. They're flying, and season's going to end when they don't want it to be honest.
They need a good summer, don't they, Sevilla, this time?
Yeah.
They need to make some good decisions. Probably not too many decisions, really.
I think they're going in the right direction as well. Yeah. When I see the players they've brought in recently, it wasn't long ago we were talking about a whole team of players that were well in their 30s.
Yeah.
It has changed. It was going to take a lot of doing. Victor Horta took some criticism, but I think a number of his signings are coming through and we're seeing a better signs from Sevilla.
And Ramos got another season in him? I mean, he was sprinting into the penalty area, wasn't he, in the last minute of the game or something? Yeah,
100%. I think I think he's been exactly as you'd expect from him this year at Sevilla. My worry with Ramos was going to be injuries. He did have that season at PSG where he wasn't fit, and he did have a season at Real Madrid where he wasn't fit, but he's recovered and he's played on a regular basis. And I think we talked earlier about Barcelona, the experienced players leading the way, being a good example. I'd take Ramos to the Euros if I was De La Fuente as well.
Nice. And we'll do the Euros again another week. There's one game left to do. Raya Vallecano 0, Almeria 1. Almeria with a win. Anthony Lozano, the scorer. Rayo should be in relegation trouble. I don't think they will be because I can't
very
see.
Clear.
I can't.
I had to check because they've been awful.
But they're not, are they? Yeah, and in fact, I don't think anyone is really, other than the bottom three. Because for all Cadiz on paper have got easy games, they never score a goal. So I think Rayo probably get away with being awful.
Yeah, I don't see Cadiz getting to 34 points.
No.
So I think Rayo, it was a terrible goal. Pep Chavarria with a throw right across his own, halfway across his own half, picks it up, throws it quickly straight to an opponent. Anthony Lozano goes through and scores the winner. So it's a win for Almeria. It doesn't mean anything, but perhaps it tells us that Rayo are not particularly good and need a big turnaround next season. Do they keep Diego Perez? I think they will.
Would you?
Yeah, I think I would now. They've made that change, I think chucking it all away, they have to give him a summer transfer window, major transformation in terms of turning players around, give him some say in who comes in and who goes out, and then take it from there. It's a learning curve for a young manager in his first job. If you must be aware of that when you give him the opportunity. So you have to be aware that, you know, they've survived, they can write this off and then look to build a new Rayo and Iñigo Perez.
Yeah, right. We'll leave it there, Terry. That's enough from La Liga this week. There's loads more to play for, everybody, so we'll be back. Don't worry about that. The race for seventh and the can Cadiz suddenly start banging three goals a game. Also, all that to play for. We'll be back for the Patreons later in the week because there is one huge game coming up this week, of course, in the Real Madrid at home to Bayern Munich in the semi-finals of the Champions League. So what we're going to do now is go and figure out when we're going to record that, and we'll see Patreons for that, and we'll see everybody else for a regular podcast next week. Thank you for listening, everybody, and we'll see you soon.